Welcome to Two Fools Podcast. I'm Dave, and today we are going to talk a little bit about the new trailer for The Hateful Eight and other Tarantino films, and I have two guests today. I have our man from Amsterdam, Mike Nodine, and our man from Inglewood, Martin Phillips.
Hello, my name is Martin Phillips, and I'm fresh off the mountain. I'm glad to be here today.
Hello, I'm Michael Nodine, and I'm here as well.
So, we're going to take a moment to take a look at the video here and give our fresh opinion. Be back in a moment. All right, we just finished watching the trailer. Mike, you were kind of more the Tarantino buff. Why don't you give us your first impression?
Oh, my first impression was I was kind of shocked that he chose to do another Western after Django Unchained. It makes me wonder if he's, you know, decided to switch genres a little bit and aim towards, you know, the old Wild West theme for a little while, or if it's just a misnomer.
Well, what kind of genre would you say he was known for to begin with?
Well, in his own words, his big thing was the heist picture. You know, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, all had that element of something stolen, and that's the way the film starts. And, well, Reservoir Dogs is all about, you know,
the aftermath.
Something was stolen, you just see the aftermath.
Now, it's been a few years since I watched Jackie Brown. Would you consider that to be a heist film, too?
I think Jackie Brown's like it's in that genre, but it's not, it's, you know, we were bad people, and now we've moved on. I think Jackie Brown's more of a film about everybody gets older.
I thought I recalled it being like his love note to blaxploitation of the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
That's true,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Kill Bill is the revenge movie.
Yeah, I think Kill Bill was it's a live-action Jap anime, you know, well, homage.
There's even anime in it.
Yeah.
And so what'd you think of the trailer, Martin?
I liked it. It reminds me, it's, we play a lot of role-playing games, of course, but it's a good Deadlands setup.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely buy that.
All the characters have a distinct look about them. They, you can see facets of them even in the trailer. I know this guy is riled up. This guy, you don't get him angry. You know, this kind of thing.
I hate that you said that because now my brain's all like, so they got eight strangers in there. One's about to be hung, and then all of a sudden, Wendigo attack. Let's run this game.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, so me personally. Yeah, I watched the trailer a few days ago with Kayla, who, those of you who pay any attention to our other videos know, she's my kid and been in our Daredevil review. Yeah, Kayla just sat there and was like, no, Nick Fury, don't do that. And I was like, oh, sweetie, you don't know. That's not Nick Fury. That's Samuel motherfucking Jackson. You're going to get a bullet.
And he don't play.
Because you're going to get a bullet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I done told Nodine, I was like, don't be going to see Star Wars without me, and I think I'm going to put this one on that list.
Yes, this is one of those I've got to go see in the theater. The atmosphere in the theater will make this a good movie.
Yeah, but you
got
to see it with your pals.
You
got to
see it
with
your pals. Yeah, true story.
I don't know. I'm glad to see it. I'm glad to see him doing, like you say, stepping out of his genre.
Yeah.
I didn't really know he was known for a genre. Now, I know he does a lot of writing that I'm not aware of. You want to, as our Tarantino expert, yeah, amongst the three of us.
Well, I mean, the two biggest films that he wrote but didn't have too much to do with were True Romance with Christian Slater and Arquette. I can't remember her first
John
name.
John Arquette?
No, the female. His sister.
Oh, I don't know.
But also in he wrote Natural Born Killers.
Right.
Which, if you watch them, you can definitely see the influence of, you know, the dialogue.
Now, doesn't he have, let me rephrase that sentence before I start. Does he have any kind of writing credit for Dusk Till Dawn?
Oh, yes.
I mean, I knew he was in it.
Well, if I remember correctly, he directed it, it was written primarily by Robert Rodriguez.
I think you got that backwards.
Okay.
I think Rodriguez was the director.
Okay, well, I could
it's
be.
It's one of the
it's,
other.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. It's been a little bit.
It's always been my opinion that Quentin Tarantino does things in a film that you normally don't see in a film. He's not scared to shoot somebody in the head. He's not scared to show you someone getting shot in the head. Whereas he's not scared of an R rating.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Tarantino I always thought was funny is he makes pictures about bad people. And, you know, it's been done before, but he kind of humanizes them to an extent. You know, they're sitting around talking about, you know, well, my car just got keyed and, you know.
But he just got back from doing a load of drugs over in Amsterdam.
But bullshit everybody eventually, you know, small things everybody has to put up with. You don't think about the bad guy having to deal with these things because, well, they're the bad guy.
Well, I mean, that's a topic we've touched on in other podcasts. You know, the Joker is not a villain. He's a force of nature.
Yeah.
You can't really relate to the Joker. Who the fuck wakes up and goes, I got to put my purple pants on and poison all the fish in the damn lake? Nobody. But everybody gets up and goes, man, I got my 7th parking ticket this month. Maybe somebody needs to eat a bullet, you know? Everybody has that moment, we just don't act well on it, right? So, according to his complete filmography...
Dust Till Dawn, right there.
Say that again, a little louder.
Dust Till Dawn, right there. See it?
Yeah, but not director.
Okay.
Writer.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. So he was a writer, producer, and an actor.
Yeah. Okay, my mistake.
No worries. But, I mean, writing, he's got a lot.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And there's all his writing. So My Best Friend's Birthday apparently was his first movie?
No, that became True Romance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. We just don't know if he's going to be in the Hateful Eight. Right now, it has a blank spot. I think that's kind of funny.
Well, it's like Stan Lee. If you're going to have a Quentin Tarantino film, you look for him.
Yeah.
Because normally he shows up. I mean, there's a bunch that he's not in, but there's a lot that he is in.
So, what's your favorite one on this list, Marty?
I probably go personal favorite probably Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
It's just. I had to watch it twice to understand it. The first time I saw it, I'm like, I don't get it, Batman. And then when I watched it again, I'm like, oh, okay, now I put all the pieces together. All
right. And what about you, Nodine?
Same here. I got it right away because I'm like, it didn't seem out of sequence to me. I know that seems a little strange, but it fit the way my mind works.
You caught the story he was telling.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the story... Maybe, like, the time would be telling. See, I'm like you, Martin. I watched... Well, first of all, let me go ahead and give you my introduction to Pulp Fiction story. So, Mike and Marty, after a day of drinking, and me being the designated driver, we go back to Mike's basement apartment dwelling, and they're like, oh, you got to watch this movie, motherfucker. And they put it in. And next thing we know... Maynard done caught him a couple flies and calls up Zed. And for those of you who know the rest of that...
It's a bad day for Marcellus
Wallace. It's a bad day for Marcellus Wallace. So, Comanche, the song, gives me the chills even to this day, 20 years later. Yeah. No, but I'm like you, Marty. I kind of always thought it would be funny if somebody took the film and re-edited it to be in chronological order. I know story-wise it would have been wonky.
Yeah.
But I think it would be... interesting experiment. My personal favorite is the Kill Bills, Volume 1 and 2.
I like those a lot, and there was something different to watch. I have a personal thing about the Kill Bill 1. I think he did it on purpose, and I've said this before to a lot of people. You watch this movie, and you're sitting in a theater, and you have a big old giant industrial size soda that you've been sipping on, you've been eating popcorn watching this movie, and it gets near the end of the film and you're wanting to see the two main people fight, and what does he have sitting there in the middle of this quiet snowfield where they're about to fight? A damn water feature that fills up with water and tips over.
Right.
And tilts back up. And
Japanese garden water clock.
Right. Well, you're sitting here watching this movie going, oh God, I got to go piss! But I want to see this fight. I mean, this whole damn film's building up these two people fight.
Are you saying that scene manipulates your bladder knowing the movie experience, just to heighten tension?
That's my theory.
I never heard that before, and I think it's goddamn brilliant you thought of that.
That's not bad.
And I think if it's true, Tarantino's an evil motherfucker.
We Indeed. Already knew this.
So, what about you? I mean, any movie experience you this really just...
I remember watching Jackie Brown, because we... Made,
yeah, you and I went saw that.
And I didn't get it at first. And I just... I don't know what... It just seemed really gritty, and I just, there was a dislike. And then suddenly I watch it a few more times. And eventually it dawns on me. It's not about what's going around them. It's about getting older. Which, you know, we were close to that apex of, okay, we're officially getting older. And now I watch it and I eat it up.
Yeah. Oh, I remember watching it with you. I think we went down to the cheap
dollar,
movie.
Yeah, the dollar movie.
It had kind of went under the radar, unfortunately, and I remember watching it and thinking it was just like an action film with a bit of comedy, and I enjoyed it, but to be honest with you, it's not one that I've revisited. Mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to it. I was just telling Mike the other day we need to have a movie marathon. Back in the day, everyone's favorite phrase, my first wife and I used to host game night. So every Friday, people would come over between 3 and 6, and we'd get playing from 6 to 11, 6 to 1 in the morning. Saturdays, we'd get together, but people sometimes show up between noon and 4, so Nodine was usually one of the first persons over, and every week he brought a movie. And we either watch Pulp Fiction, Star Wars, Reservoir Dogs, or some variation close to those as a wasting time till everybody got there. And I, you know... We used to joke about that a lot.
Oh, yeah. I used to have a collection of movies that was like a litmus test for people I hung out with. And I would present them going, oh, you've got to see this. You've got to see this. And Tarantino was real big. And Kevin Smith.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I was just like, these are things you need to see.
I think you're the one who introduced me to Kevin Smith. Oh, yeah. I remember seeing Kill Bill in the theater with Charles. And when that old 1970s kung fu movie opening.
And
I mean, he
had a fit.
Almost. You could almost see a little tear of nostalgia form in the corner of his eye. But, you know, Charles threatened that motherfucker back in where it came from.
But when I seen him, I'm like, oh, ho, ho. Very well done. I see where this is going. From the start.
And see, and I don't know who Sonny Chiba was.
Sonny Chiba's a bad
man. And I didn't know who Gordon Liu.
Liu.
I don't.
Yes.
Okay, but just... Charles grinning like a 12-year-old seeing his first titty. I mean,
nice and round, firmness.
Like that dude's bald head. The cruel tutelage of Master Pai Mei. He doesn't like women. He doesn't like Caucasians. And he really doesn't like. So, you said, Mike, I think that was an interesting thought. I never even thought about it. Mm-hmm. I thought we were just going to fanboy. But you said, like, Jackie Brown was kind of your least favorite at first. Yeah. So, on the list of his direct... Let's just stay with his directions. What's on the list of things he directed is your least favorite? And looking at his direct list, is there any on there you haven't seen?
Let's see. I have not seen... I haven't seen The Hateful Eight.
Well.
I haven't seen the Grace movie ever sold.
I don't even...
No, we're just looking
no,
at...
No, just what he's directed.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. I'm following...
The greatest movie ever sold was a documentary that he acted in.
Okay.
As himself.
I didn't care too much for... The first Kill Bill, I thought it was a little slow.
Yeah?
And they should have gotten to the action a little quicker.
And that was your least favorite?
Yeah.
Same question to you, Marty.
I hadn't seen Grindhouse or Death Proof.
Okay.
So, but... My least favorite? Well, I really don't have a not favorite in that list. There's, of the ones I've seen, I've liked them. But I couldn't put one, well, let's see, I'd probably have to put Inglourious Basterds at the bottom of the list.
Yeah?
Because I went into it looking for the war movie, and it turned out to be a revenge flick.
Yeah.
Well, technically, Inglourious Basterds was a remake. It was a 70s film.
Okay, so I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now, obviously, I never saw My Best Friend's Birthday. A partial lost film. I've only seen Grindhouse and Death Proof once each.
Same here.
And I'd have to say... And okay, so they got Sin City listed on here as special guest director. Mm-hmm. I think you two kind of skipped over that.
Yeah.
Do you not consider that... Because I don't consider that really a Tarantino film.
Not really. I consider that Frank Miller.
If I remember correctly, he just directed a scene.
Yeah.
What's like or four, one of the little stories.
It's like Four Rooms.
Yeah, Four Rooms.
Oh, Four Rooms I've loved.
Yeah. So, why don't you go ahead and give a little rundown for Four Rooms.
Four Rooms is an interesting theory. It's a bell clerk at New Year's Eve, and he's, you know, servicing all the rooms, doing what they need. But each room has a different director.
I remember watching that with you. I don't remember if that was the first movie you guys showed me or not, but I liked it. It was neat how they had the stories being contained inside the bigger story of the guy working in the hotel.
And they're all slightly interwoven.
Right.
In
here
places.
And there. Yeah. I like that one a lot.
When Antonio Banderas just tells you, don't misbehave.
Oh, yeah. Total badass in that film.
And all he was somebody's dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Well I like when he comes back in, there's a dead whore in the bed. The dude's got a needle stuck in his arm. He's just smacked the daughter, and the place is on fire, and the dad walks in and goes, did they misbehave?
Yeah, because the girl stabs him in the leg with the needle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the little kid, and the other kid's over there setting the fucking drapes on fire.
Right.
That's, did they misbehave? That's cool. No, they were little angels.
Well, every person in a Tarantino film is an uber badass. And, you know, they have to maintain that persona. It's like, I'm not worried about the chaos around it. I just want to know what I want to know.
I think my least favorite of these would have to be... I'm going to go with Death Proof. Again, I only saw it once. But there was nothing there that made me want to go back and see it. You know, it's some guy driving around in a car that apparently... can't be wrecked.
Yeah.
He's a stunt driver. He's in the safety harness. But the person in the passenger side, he always picks up girls, rolls the car, gets them killed. That's his fix.
So the only thing I didn't like about it, it was tied in with the Robert Rodriguez film. And it was sold as a horror movie. Well, I don't like horror movies.
All right.
So.
We looked on the list... And Rotten Tomatoes does consider that one to be the worst of his movies. The rest of them, I think, were like 89% or better.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was, 84. There you go. Kill Bill Volume 2, 84%. So between 84 and 93% fresh rating, if you use Rotten Tomato as any kind of, as you said, litmus test. But yeah, Death Proof was 67. I get what you were going with the Inglourious Basterds. I went in there and... thinking it was going to be the war movie, and then it jumped rails.
Right.
Well, most Tarantino films do.
Well, no, I didn't mind it being the revenge flick, but I wasn't expecting it to be the fantasy, the fictional
history.
Right. Right. Like they shot Hitler. Okay. See, I was like, they're going to go try to kill Hitler at this movie, and I'm like, well, this is not going to work. This Hitler's not going to be there.
Yeah, he's going to get out. He's going to escape somehow.
Right. So I was interested in seeing how that was going to go out, and it just became like the last 5 minutes of just oogieing on Hitler's face with bullets.
How many times can I kill him? How many different ways can I shoot a Nazi?
Right. Everything but the end, I liked. And I was just, dude. Buongiorno.
Yeah, I can't get over that. That cracks me up.
Excuse me.
I do that sometimes at work.
I don't speak any Italian. That means you speak third best.
Yeah, I still say to this day, they wished that Brad Pitt's character is being from Kentucky. I was like, no, sir, that's a Georgia accent. I know it well.
Yeah, we do live, 20 miles from it?
Yeah.
So as we talked about earlier, the movie was... supposed to be filmed in Wyoming, but they moved to Colorado. We were looking at the... we paused for a moment. I don't know how much editing is going to do because I'm lazy. we restarted watching it again. We started with the opening of him, of Samuel L. Jackson's character sitting on the three dead bodies. I gotta admit, when I first saw that, I thought it was horse.
Oh, no,
it was horse.
It was a box.
So Marty was looking at this whole 70mm ultra Panavision
anamorphic lens with an aspect ratio of 2.751.
There you
to
go.
One, an ultra wide aspect ratio that's used on new films in the 50s and 60s, such as Ben Hur, Mutiny on the Bounty, and A Mad, 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 Mad World.
Yeah. Woo.
I can read.
What the fuck does all that mean?
Well, it means that it makes it look bigger when it's on the screen. You get a bigger view.
Well, I do, you know, when we looked at the trailer, you could just see the wide openness of out there. I think it's funny you keep focusing on the idea that this is a Western, but it's a snowy Western.
Yes. It's to me, it's a Western film, but it's in the snow. I don't think I've ever seen
Pale
a Western.
Rider.
Is it in the snow?
Yeah, it was in the snow.
Pale Rider's the one with the...
Eastwood.
The preacher keeps whipping everybody's ass with the hickory.
Oh, yeah, that's... And the more modern Western would be... I can't think of the name of it right now.
Yeah. Who's in it?
Christian Bale. Oh, 310 to Yuma. That's it.
Okay.
They had some aspects of snow in that film as well.
Most time when you think of a Western, you think of dirty,
Texas, Arizona,
dusty, the Badlands, all this kind of good stuff. It's to me, it's a different take on a Western to see it in the snow. Yeah. Granted, Pale Rider, I hadn't seen that in many, 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 many years.
Well, think how funny that is that to the rest of the world, the American cowboy is Americana icon. Just as, you know, we think Japanese, we think samurai or ninja. We think of England and France, we think of a knight or, you know, a lord. So, areas have these culture icons, and our culture icons, cowboy.
Yeah.
I never really thought about that. Yeah. I never identified myself as a quote-unquote cowboy.
It is our mythology.
Right, right. And you know, your mythology idea of the cowboy is... guy coming in off the dusty street, swinging open the saloon.
You know, you go through the swinging doors, you belly up to the bar, you order a shot of rot cut, and you say, hey, where's the warning poster?
I'm looking for the son of a bitch that shot my dad. But North Dakota, South Dakota is, quote-unquote, the West.
Well, I mean, in that time, it was... to an extent, unexplored.
All right. It was so, the frontier.
Yeah, people were moving west, and you know they ended up in areas like that.
How awesome is it to think that in a certain mindset, everything west of the Mississippi is the West?
Yeah.
But yeah, the frontier. See, I think that's a very good key. Is we should move away from the idea of the West was won as the frontier was explored. I mean, there are places in Canada that are still like that, and I'm sure there's places in America. I know Montana has some of the lowest people per square mile. I mean, it's not Alaska, but
Alaska and Alaska,
yeah, the Great White North, take off, eh? Well, anything else about the trailer you guys want to go into?
Well, I did like the fact that apparently, you know, they went back to the good and the bad and the ugly musical director. I can't recall his name. Marcon?
Ennio Morricone?
Yeah. He hadn't worked in, like, decades. But, you know.
Well, apparently he worked with Django Unchained.
Yeah.
And didn't want to work with Tarantino afterwards, but apparently has changed his net mind.
Money is a powerful motivator.
You know, I think I will do that. Give me the money. If a violent director in California offers you a job, I want a homie and a bowl of rice ready to take that job. So, one of my little personal favorites in this is when they're introducing the whole concept of the characters in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And Samuel Jackson's talking to Kurt Russell's character. You know, most of us bounty hunters just shoot you in the back. When the hangman comes to get you, you hang. And that little two old dogs nod and respect at one another. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're going to get some shit, though, about everybody using pipes.
No, well, it's...
I mean, it's legitimate, don't get me wrong, but I you don't spend a lot of time on the internet, and I don't spend anywhere near as much as Drew, the other two fool, does. The butt hurt is strong on the internet. As much as... Okay, so we sit here and we Wikipedia information or Google information. Everything humanity knows is at your fingertips in minutes. And people don't realize in minutes. 40 years ago, you wanted to know something, you had to go to the library. And if they didn't know it, it took weeks for the book to get there. If they had a library sharing.
Yeah.
And now, we find it in minutes. And unfortunately, the downside is, everybody bitches. Everybody finds something to bitch about. Even we find something to bitch about. We find something that offends us. Except Nodon, he hates everything.
Damn right.
Nodon hates himself so much he's trying to kill himself with liquor and cigarettes.
It's an ongoing process.
Damn fine.
I fight the battle.
He's doing a good job of it.
He's still with us.
And during the recording of this, he's already taken 2 or 3 cigarette breaks.
Two.
The pause button is an amazing skill.
Yes.
But yeah, I do. I think the internet's going to get butthurt about the pipes. Dude, I saw a news report where they were bitching about hobbits smoking.
I don't personally, that's a non-issue for me. I mean, it's part of the story, but people smoked in those time periods. I mean, it's the hobbits, they grew to pipe tobacco. So I don't get that.
I mean, yeah, historically probably people, a lot of people smoked because a lot of people stank, you know what I mean, in the old west where you think of. They didn't have water to waste for bathing. And in the Old West, where this is, it's the frontier,
yeah,
it's freezing. You'll die. All right, so opening the door and entering into the haberdashery.
Awesome.
Go ahead and tell the people at home, Mr. Phillips, what a haberdashery is.
Haberdashery is where you go to get men's things, like a nice hat, cufflinks, maybe a tie, something of those nature.
In this setting, a little more frontiersman, and I think you had an opinion on that. Furs?
Oh, no, that was a random guess.
No.
Well, my guess on that is, well, this place is up in the mountains. They're wintering over.
It almost looks like a hotel, just looking at it.
To me, it looks like a hunting lodge.
Yeah.
A big hunting lodge, and they call it the haberdashery because, well, they're going to catch a lot of furs, make a lot of hats out of it.
Hats. Yeah, so that ending scene where they open up and show you the whole 70mm, you can see the mountain, and it looks kind of like a lake, and the trees, and the building itself. Yeah, that's a angry Bob Ross kind of painting, ain't it?
Well, that's kind of a misnomer, because you can't have an angry Bob Ross, because Bob Ross is laid back.
I don't know.
No, no, he will not get angry. That's Bob Ross.
Here's a secret little hut. There's 8 angry little motherfuckers in there.
Well, on that note, I watch a lot of Bob Ross.
Okay.
And every time he paints something that has a little building in it, somebody's going to die. Go and watch some Bob Ross. When he paints a little abandoned building out in the middle of the woods, there's usually a lake. Somebody drowned in that lake. I kid you not. Go watch.
I mean, maybe that's just a way of him exercising the evil since he decided to give up yelling.
I'm just saying, Bob Ross is a hell of a man.
So, why don't we take a look at the 8 characters. We have Samuel L. Jackson playing Major Marquise Warren, the bounty hunter. And obviously in the trailer, he features strongly.
Of course.
It's Samuel Jackson. What do you want?
I mean, he's almost the narrator of the trailer. Kurt Russell as John Ruth, the hangman. He kind of looks like a salty old dog, don't he?
Well, he's got a fierce mustache.
You want to go ahead and take the next one, Mike?
Oh, also has Jennifer Jason Leigh as Daisy, I don't know how to pronounce Dahmer that.
Pugh.
Okay. As the prisoner. As self-explanatory.
Well, we all were just discussing the way she looked in the beginning of the trailer.
Well, at the beginning of it, she's got a black eye, and over the course of the film, it looks like she gets at least mushed in the mouth at least one time.
She has it looks like she got some dried up blood under her nose.
Well, there's one scene she's got like, she's all smashing.
I think it's from making that pose, you know, tell her, I'm taking this woman to hang.
I'm a little concerned that with seven dudes in the middle of the snow and one chick who's fixing to hang, that there's going to be, there's going to be some naughty behavior.
You think they may run a train?
No.
I might take her to the train, but I don't think they're going.
I think somebody's probably going to try to get fresh, and it's going to be dealt with one way or another. I just don't think it's going to be a happy thing. But then again, this is a Tarantino film, and he ain't worried about your fucking happiness.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Walton Goggins as the sheriff.
Oh yeah,
Chris Mannix.
Now I don't know who Walton Goggins is.
He's a Justified. He's on the show Justified.
Well, he could be bona fide, huh?
Well, he's also, he played a drag queen on Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, okay. In the trailer, I'm sure you can figure it out by a process of elimination with a little bit of picture comparison. We, however, did you notice him? Oh, you know who he was?
Oh, yeah, I knew who he was.
Did he say dick in the trailer?
He talked to Tim Roth going, well, I think the haberdasher is going
to... Oh, so he's the one standing beside him. Okay. Yeah. Damien Bashir? Bakir.
I think so.
As Bob the Mexican. Sound like he was one of the naming conventions for one of our games. Bob the Mexican.
Yeah, right. You see him? I don't think he says anything.
He's got a nice coat.
Yeah. Tim Roth as Oswaldo?
Mowbray? The little man. He looks like he's a fancy dame.
Yeah.
When I first saw it, I thought he was, I think, Chris Mentz, I think is the actor's name, Christopher Mentz, the German from Inglourious Bastards. Yeah. Mm. That's who I thought it was at first. I was like, oh, he's doing his American accent. And Mike's like, no, that's Tim Roth. And I'm like, Wikipedia. Well, damn, Mike's right.
Michael Madsen as Joe Gage. The cowpuncher.
Now, I recognized him when we saw him.
Oh, yes.
That's old Bud. He doesn't really do anything in the trailer,
but he does,
trailer,
he
but
does
you
give,
see him.
He does give the glare.
Yeah, he does look like a dangerous mother. And then Bruce Dern as General Sanford Smithers, the Confederate.
General Smithers. Eggs.
I don't know. So, how hype are you for this? I mean, it's no Star Wars, right?
Correct. But it's one of those, like I said, it's a great Deadlands movie.
See, it says here that it's coming out on Christmas.
It's a rough time to come out because you're going to go head to head with Star Wars.
Oh, Star Wars. We looked it up yesterday. Star Wars comes out on the 18th.
Yeah, Hollywood this year has decided so, they want all my money.
That's the week before Christmas.
So, this comes out...
a week after opening Star Wars.
Okay, so everyone that goes to see Star Wars...
will be ready to see this.
Yes.
See, now me, I don't watch movies on opening anymore.
I used to love to do it. I'm just not able to do it anymore.
Kayla and I went and watched episode 3 on the midnight opening. That was a very favorite memory, but it's gotten to the point now that, A...
you're just too fragging old like the rest of us.
Too old, too poor, just don't want to deal with the mess. I'd rather go on a matinee, pay a little less, sit in less people in the...
Now, sometimes I like having a large crowd when I go to the theater, because that's part of the entertainment is the other crowd... members' reaction.
Well, you're going to be one of the few people ever on the internet who says that.
Oh, I'll go see Star Wars at the open if possible, just because...
it's Star Wars?
I've been waiting 30-some-odd years, so I'm going to see it.
Yeah. I think... well, see, you know, you're like, ooh, Christmas. But a lot of people... Christmas morning, the rest of the world is dead. After 4 o'clock, people get bored, start leaving the house.
Yeah, movies.
Well, so there's some people's... tradition is get up in the morning, eat your dinner, open your presents, get out of the house.
Right.
Go play with your toys, go to a movie.
Right. I'm not sure I want to go see this on Christmas, but I definitely want to see it. Let's see, using our handy-dandy calendar tool down here in the bottom corner of the computer, Christmas is going to be a Friday anyways.
Yes. Yep.
So it may very well... No, I doubt it. I was going to say it may very well open Christmas Eve morning or night.
Could
Christmas
be.
Morning.
Could be.
But realistically, it's probably not.
No, because everyone's going to
want to
be
the holiday. Yeah. Star Wars will probably open Thursday night, Friday morning.
Wednesday afternoon.
Friday, 12:01. Yeah, Wednesday afternoon, 7:30 in the evening. Special seating. Greeting.
Got to win tickets. And if there's anyone that is having that contest, sign me up.
Yeah, right. We'll take five.
No, tickets. But I'll be very Six. Interested to see Hateful Eight. I'm a big fan of this Western genre. And
you know, it's funny, you keep mentioning Deadlands, and Deadlands is one of my favorite role-playing games, but I've never been into the Western movies.
I like a lot of the Western movies, just because you always have that one guy who is faster than someone else. Or it's not that he's faster, it's just that he's smarter.
Yeah.
You mentioned the 310 to Yuma. I remember watching that.
Oh, yeah.
I remember being entertained by it, but never going back to it.
Yeah. I like the film. I remember vaguely the original from when I was very small, and it's there's a short joke. I thought it was very well done.
I'm trying to remember, did I see the remake of True Grit before I saw the John Wayne film? And I really can't recall. I just know that I like both of them a lot. I cannot think of it's based on Taming of the Shrew, and it's John Wayne and I think Miss O'Hara.
Yeah, her name's not O'Hara. It's
O something. Anyhow, she did a lot of movies with him.
Oh yeah,
and he's Mr. I think Cockburn in it.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I can't think of the
Rooster.
Name.
Rooster Cogburn.
No, that's True Grit.
Okay.
That's his character's name in True Grit.
Yeah.
The movie I'm thinking of, he's like a ranch owner, and like the rest of the world is finally getting out to where they are. So his daughter comes back from boarding school, and there's like Jerry Van Dyke is courting her, and he's wearing just does a little jazz music and the goofy dance,
yeah.
And just a real dandy, and he ends up. His wife's been mad at him and living in Denver for months or years. You get what I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
I know the film. For some reason, I'm drawing a blank on it.
Right? That's like the first Western I really recall watching.
Soon to be Google here shortly.
Yeah, probably not. We're lazy. But the funny part is the kid watched it recently, and she's like, "Dad, have you seen this? This is hilarious. I ain't gonna hit you." Like, heck I ain't. Wham! And I was like, that's my favorite scene, too.
Yep.
I'm really looking forward to this. I like Tarantino's films, man. I haven't seen one that was bad. When the worst movie is, I was entertained, but I just never went back to it.
I agree with that.
You know what I'm saying?
He does put out a good product, but you have to have a certain mindset going into it. You're not going to go and go, "Yeah, this is going to be a nice love story." No, it's not going to happen.
No,
somebody's going to get shot.
It's a Tarantino film, you know. It's not going to be conservative.
Well,
that
kind of surprises me. It's like, how can people be mad? If you'll go to the Wikipedia page of Tarantino, you'll see he's got a little section that they've written up called controversy.
Oh, indeed, he does
generate some.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, man. It just cracks me up. It's like, the man's been putting movies out since, what, 94? The early 90s?
94.
Okay. That was a little bit before that, but I get you.
That's, well, okay, it might be 93, 92. I can't remember when Reservoir Dogs came out.
1980s, he created the Best Friends film in 87.
Mm-hmm.
The final reel of film was almost completely destroyed, but its screenplay later formed the basis of True Romance. 1992, Reservoir Dogs was screened at Sundance Film Festival. So, yeah, I mean, he's been in the business for 25 years.
Yeah.
How can you not know what... Do you think that works against him, though?
I think the genre he does with the ultra-violence kind of works against him.
Well, the only director producer, writer, person that I can remotely show any form of competency and knowledge is Kevin Smith. So you think Clerks, Mallrats, Jay and Silent Bob,
Dogma,
you get what I'm saying?
Jason Amy.
You get those style of movies.
Yeah.
And then I found out he did Zach and Miri Do a Porno.
Yeah.
Now I haven't seen the movie, but he directed it.
Well, he also did Tusk too.
Okay, well I haven't seen that, but that's more of an independent film. That's,
it's rough.
That's a different beast. What was the cop movie with?
Cop Out.
Cop Out.
Yeah.
And he did a third one that isn't. It isn't in his what we know as his real
state.
Okay.
It was not terribly a good film.
But you get what I'm saying. It's not what we would call in his wheelhouse. He stepped out of it and experimented. And there's mixed reviews, and we're not getting into that for the moment. But with Tarantino, he hasn't really stepped out of his wheelhouse.
Well, it's one of those things that's what he's known for, and it's what he's good at.
Yeah. I know that the end result will be, does he want to step out of his wheelhouse? We can't answer that, but what I propose to you two is, do you think he could? Do you think, not only do you think he could, as in do you think he has the ability, but do you think he could, as in that people would buy it? So Kevin Smith did Jersey Girl, and a lot of people didn't like it at first because they were expecting dick and fart jokes, and what they got was a heartfelt family and romantic comedy. Do you think Tarantino could do something like that?
Could or would are two different
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Well, I'm presenting both of them to you.
I think he could. I don't think he would bother. You know, he has stated he likes the kind of films he makes, or, you know, he would make them. You know, he said, I make films that I don't see in other places, or I don't see the particular take that I present. I mean, there are lots of action movies that are
right
Tarantino-like, but the dialogue's not there. The witty back and forth between characters around the explosions and whatnot.
Well, see, I know a lot of people, they tout Josh Whedon for dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta be honest with you. A lot of times talking to Drew about video games, he knows a lot of this behind-the-scenes information. And I say, I don't really know that kind of stuff. I'm not interested in it. And I have to say this truth about... it's the same truth I have about movies. I go to the movie, it's the story. It's the personalities in the story. It's the event of the story. Not who's in it, who directed it. I've only went to one movie because the makeup artist we happened to know. And that was Wise Guys versus Zombies. A movie by Adam Minovic, I think his name is. He played the abusive Carol's husband in the first season of Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's made a handful of movies, writer, director, and stuff. He's made a few of them and sold them to Tromaville. Mm-hmm. They're fun, but, you know, they got a look to them, and you just got to accept it.
Yeah.
We went because Ray Jones was the art guy in it. And ended up having, like, the lawnmower man scene. I'm like, I fix lawnmowers. I was like, oh, good old Ray. But you get what I'm saying? The behind-the-scenes stuff just never really mattered to me.
Well, see, I'm much the same way as far as role-playing is concerned. You know, I'm not worried about the background. I just want to follow the story and participate.
Right. Well, where are you weighing on this?
I'm with you, fellas.
All right. Thanks, Delmar. So, well, do you think Tarantino would step out of his wheelhouse, and do you think he could, based on not his ability, but public acceptance of it?
I think that if he does, it'll be one of those things, you'll go to the... So, like, if he makes a love story, someone will get shot in it. Just because it's a Tarantino film, people expect it. You know, if he steps outside his thing, then he's stepping away from what made him.
I get where you're going with that. But see, No Dime brings up he's witty dialogue and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But why couldn't you do, let's go ahead and throw this mental experiment out and say a rom-com. He's going to do a romantic comedy.
Okay.
You got to have dialogue in a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
If not, it becomes sophomoric humor because it's all sight gags. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, he's got writing chops for it if he can get around the material, a desire to, you know.
I think if he were to make the film with maybe another director.
You're right.
And, you know, let me do this section and you worry about, you know, this part and just, you know, I'll give you dialogue up to a point and you take the rest.
Well, see, and then I was going to take what you said, Marty, and go, all right, so he makes this movie. I don't think they put him being the director as the selling point. Right. You know, you see a movie and it's like, it's a Kevin Smith movie, directed by Kevin Smith, written by Kevin Smith. You're like, okay, I'm going to go see it because I liked his other work. Whereas when these other movies like Cop Out came out, you didn't go see Cop Out because Kevin Smith directed it. You went and saw it because Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan were in it.
Well, I personally, it was a collection of all both elements.
Right. You know. But do you remember when the commercials were out? I mean, that was the focus.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, hey, here's a cop comedy. Here's the two people in it. Mm-hmm. You didn't hear
the director.
Right. When Clerks 2 came out, it was like, from the... Or when Mallrats came out, from the maker of Clerks.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'd like to see the experiment.
Well, to me, on that note with the experiment, it'll be a female and a male hitman that get thrown together, and then that's where your romantic comedy comes in.
We've already seen that, though.
Yeah. And so by your explanation and discussion, you're pretty much saying, maybe not on purpose, but you're saying he's stuck in what he's doing.
I wouldn't say stuck, but it's
he's not going to leave his...
No, he's not coming out of the nest. He's going to stay with what made him. Well, personally, that's my opinion.
It's like, you know, if they ever go, hey, Tarantino, would you like to make a sci-fi film? You know, I'd be kind of curious about that experiment.
Like he'd do...
Well, considering he likes to keep the budget small.
Yeah.
You know, and he's very a very minimal director.
I think he could do a Star Wars Bounty Hunter movie.
Well, he's already said, you know, he's been offered, like, superhero movies.
Yeah.
And he turns them down. He goes, you wouldn't like what I do to your characters.
Well, any closing thoughts about Hateful Eight or the wonderful library that is Tarantino's film stock?
Well, I was very excited about the trailer, and I'm kind of curious whether... I'm curious about the film after Hateful Eight. If he's going to stick in this genre, the Wild West, or if he's going to move on to something else.
Has he really come out and said this is going to be a swan song or anything?
No, but it's very odd for him to make two films back to back that are in the same general, well, you know. I wouldn't be surprised, you know. Theoretically, we could see Jamie Foxx pop in the film, you know.
Go ahead, Martin.
I think I like the idea of Tarantino doing a sci-fi. I think that would be interesting. Given his work on Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained, it shows that he can do other types of films, but it's more... They still have your classic Tarantino elements in them. You know, rampant violence, all this kind of good stuff. But I think The Hateful Eight, it'll be a good one to go see. It does reflect back to Django Unchained a good bit. Like Mike said, it's in that same genre. But I think it'll be a good one to go see.
You guys made me think of something. Now, Drew and I have talked about an example, Black Widow getting her own movie. Mm-hmm. And how people say she couldn't carry one. Some people say she could. And I think not every one of the Avengers movies has to be summer blockbuster movies. Yeah. Some Marvel movies could be, let's call them Avenger adjacent, and you go in with a smaller budget, you expect smaller returns. You're saying, you know, Tarantino likes smaller budgets. We look up here, he's got 8, 12, 230s, Hateful Eight is 44, Death Proof 53, Inglourious Basterds 75, Django Unchained 100 million.
Well, you know, with success, the budget increases.
Sure, sure. But we also see a growth. Now, Pulp Fiction was breakout amazing, $8 million to make, $213 million brought home. Mm-hmm. Well over 20 times, almost 25 times profit. Drew has I won't say a theory, but he has a statement that some people make movies and they're like, well, if it ain't gonna make $1 billion, I don't want to put into it.
See, I don't think Tarantino's that way. He has a love for the art.
Right.
You know.
Where we see Django almost made $500 million. So it was a 4-time success.
But that's a huge jump from $8 million to $213.9 million.
Yeah.
And not saying that that's going from $100 million to $400 million is...
Yeah, see, now that's the point. That's the point. You know, the profit wasn't... See, I think comparing Pulp Fiction to that is a bad thing because it's a spectacular surprise.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was like the Blair Witch Project.
Right.
You know what I mean? No one expected it to do what it did.
Right.
Well, let's look at Kill Bill. We can say, because Kill Bill's like in the middle of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
You got 30 millions. They made over 150 each.
Yeah.
You got a 5-time profit margin.
Right.
Now, I obviously don't know dick about the movie business, but I think if I can give you $20 and then you come back and say, here's your profit of $100, I'm on board for doing this.
Right.
Right. You know, if I got to give you $25 and I get back $100, I'm still doing that.
He hasn't had a film that people would not go, yeah, I'll give you some more money, you can make another film.
Right. Death Proof shows a bit of... Its mathematics are weird because it says $53 million to make as Grindhouse. It made $25.4 as Grindhouse.
Well, it was a combined with another
right.
Film.
It was two movies, so I don't know if this says you know it took this. I don't know how they're
yeah.
they're doing the mathematics there.
Anyhow.
But everything else he has profit. I do think that there's room for this kind of movie in the world. I don't think everything has to be the Titanic and Avengers and Avatar, and you get what I'm saying? Everything doesn't have to be this cultural theater swarming, just tidal wave of everything else.
But the Tarantino's name gives itself to that now.
Do you
think
so?
That's what you expect.
Oh, yeah. So, like, I didn't know anything at all about Django Unchained.
But you went and watched it because it was his movie?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even see trailers before?
I didn't see any trailers.
Okay. See, now, I admit, it being a Tarantino film, interests me. The trailer with Jamie Foxx and Christopher Mintz.
No, I did see maybe
Waltz,
one or two trailers.
Christopher
Waltz. Not much. Not much.
Omar Doom. Oh my God, I've got to meet Mr. Doom.
Just so I can say He needed to be a doctor.
Are you from somewhere in Europe, sir? Maybe a little...
Latveria?
Maybe a little east of Russia, west of France? Huh. All right. Yeah. I like this. I like this cinema world. This is the area of cinema that I love.
Yeah, same here.
I can get on board with that. There's... You know, I like a lot of sci-fi as well, but his films...
That was it. The sci-fi thread. That's where I was going with all this.
I brought it back.
How, I mean, a sci-fi film doesn't have to be $2.5 billion sold. It ain't got to be $750 million to make.
Yeah.
There's got to be some room in there to make a movie. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you think if you did a Star Wars Bounty Hunter themed movie, right? We won't even throw Boba Fett on it.
Okay.
Just Star Wars adjacent. You already said they're coming out with a Star Wars adjacent movie.
Yeah.
Movie.
Rogue One.
Okay.
Well, he blew it up in the first one.
If 60-70% of the film is in some backwater, shitty planet.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The setting changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like Firefly.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Western in space. Not everything has to be spaceships.
No.
Dude, in our little imagination world, that's making me hungry.
Well, I mean, in this
day... I want a Tarantino Star Wars film now.
In this day and age, I mean, you can cut corners and things to save money. You know, like in the films of the 50s where they would use stock footage for things.
You think Tarantino's never really used any computer graphics, has he?
I think he has to a certain extent because they're there. But
It's a tool now.
It's not really focused on... So much, you know, where you point at something and go, oh, that's CGI.
What I mean is, you know, a CGI, let's say, bullet effect.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect. That's one thing. But I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like,
have a creature.
It ain't Gollum.
Yeah.
You know, it ain't Smaug.
Mm.
It ain't Avatar, where
the blue,
big half creature. The movie is CGI.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of a little CGI.
Yeah.
I can spot it real easily. You know, the fake monsters and things, and I'm just like, I want to see, you know, things that took time to craft.
Well, I think we just spent like 12 minutes wrapping up, so...
Works for me.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming over here and doing this with me. I know you got a bit of a travel. I mean, your travel's not light either, Mr. Yeah. Nodine. And Mr. Phillips coming down from the mountain. I've been trying to convince Mr. Phillips to come down and be part of our podcast. We got to do Martin Comes from the Mountain, make an editorial, and just deliver the editorial or get in on some comic book discussion.
That I may do. I may do.
So...
It's been fun. It's been, I've enjoyed it. We had to do this again sometime.
Well, with that, for Two Fools Podcast, I'm Dave, and we will see you on the flip side.